Arts Center in Charleston. Seating is limited. Reservations at 217-581-ARTS. Details at charlestoncommunitytheater.org.
An area of high pressure will track across the Midwest today, bringing us a brief period of quiet weather. But by this evening, a low moving into the Midwest will spread light snow toward the Mississippi River. Light snow is possible tonight as this system quickly rolls across the Midwest. High temperatures today will range from the low 30s across northwestern Iowa and northern Wisconsin to the mid-50s across southwestern Missouri. Overnight low temperatures will range from the teens across northern portions of Wisconsin and Iowa to the mid-30s in the Ohio River Valley. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon becoming mostly cloudy. Look for a high around 40. The wind from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, light snow this evening and after midnight. Expect an accumulation around 1 inch. The low, 28. The wind will be out of the southwest from 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 35. The wind, blustery from the west at 20 to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-20s. The wind will be from the southwest around 15 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-30s. Breezy, the wind will be out of the west at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 20s. Monday, partly sunny. Look for a high in the mid-40s. Monday night, partly cloudy. Expect a low in the mid-30s. And the outlook for Tuesday, mostly cloudy and warmer. The high in the low 50s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 30s to the low 40s. Most locations reporting a partly or mostly sunny sky. At Rockford, 37. O'Hare and Peoria, 40. 37 degrees at Bloomington. At Mattoon, 36. In Carbondale, 42. 38 at South Bend and Indianapolis. 40 at Lafayette. In Terre Haute, 38. Willard Airport reported a partly sunny sky at the top of the hour, 37 degrees, the dew point 30, the relative humidity 75%, the wind out of the northwest at 7, the barometric pressure 29.97 and falling. And at 12:40, 38 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. When it comes to buying cars, it seems women do their homework, and it pays off. A recent report from leasetrader.com finds women generally get better deals than men when they buy cars. NPR's Sonari Glinton reports on the hidden power of the Internet.
Buying a car is all about information, knowing about the car, the price, the financing terms. John Sternel is with leasetrader.com, and he's been studying how men and women shop for cars.
Our data specifically says that women not only have a larger interest in cars overall, but women today are taking a more active role in the negotiating process of a vehicle and in the car shopping process in general.
Sternel says women do more research, especially on the Internet, than men, and because of that, they get better deals. And according to Kelley Blue Book, women are more likely to decide on a price before they go shopping for their next car, which also translates into savings.
The assumption still remains today that women aren't car people.
Rebecca Lindland is certainly a car person. She's a senior analyst with IHS Automotive. She says even when she goes car shopping, she's often ignored or talked down to.
We know that people expect us to fail to some extent, that people think that we're not going to know what we're talking about. So we overprepare, we overcompensate.
Lindland says part of the reason women do more research is a defense mechanism. They want to avoid the hassle of the dealership.
We don't go into a dealership to browse. We go in and we know exactly what we want. The shoe department is for browsing for women. You know, so when a woman goes into a dealership, you got to pay attention to her because we know what we want. We're in there for a very specific reason. And it's that kind of decisiveness that really manufacturers need to understand and take advantage of when people come into a dealership.
Both Sternel and Lindland say that's a lesson the car industry needs to learn quick because the influence of women on car buying is only growing. Sonari Glinton, NPR News.
Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele are a team, a comedy team. Both are biracial, half black, half white.
And so we actually think that we're particularly adept at lying because on a daily basis, we constantly have to adjust our blackness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
like, I mean, to terrify white people.
Yep, to terrify pointless. White people. That's one of the main reasons. And then,
because, I mean, with our voices now, we sound very white. We are not intimidating anybody
We
talk.
Yeah, we sound whiter than the black dude in the college a cappella group. That's how white we sound.
NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports on their new comedy sketch show, which premieres next week on Comedy Central.
You can learn a lot about Key and Peele in a sketch they do in which Jordan Peele impersonates President Obama.
I just want to say that I know a lot of people out there seem to think that I don't get angry. That's just not true.
And Keegan-Michael Key plays Luther, Mr. Obama's anger translator.
Luther, first off, concerning the recent developments in the Middle Eastern region, I just want to reiterate our unflinching support for all people and their right to a democratic process.
Hey, all y'all dictators out there, keep messing around and see what happens. Just see what happens. Watch.
Keegan-Michael Key paces back and forth, flails his arms. Sometimes he puts his face right into the camera like he's about to punch it. As President Obama, Jordan Peele is unflappable.
I just want to say to my critics, I hear your voices, and I'm aware of your concerns.
So maybe if you can chill the out for like a second, then maybe I can focus on some you know?
Key and Peele say the idea came from a few different sources. First, they're fans of early Saturday Night Live, and one of their favorite sketches was the fake TV news.
If you remember Garrett Morris, and they say, and now for the Association of the Deaf, Garrett Morris will be doing the announcement. And then Garrett Morris would scream at the top of his lungs.
Our top story tonight.
And so that was something we had talked about that we thought, wouldn't it be nice, you know, if we could find a way to finagle Obama's nature and use that as a nugget? You know what I mean? How would we get someone to interpret what we know he really wants to say?
They were even more inspired to write the sketch when a congressman shouted, "You lie," during one of President Obama's speeches.
The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegal.
He and Peele say it bothered them that Mr. Obama barely reacted.
For him to have that much composure, it's
right.
Like, you don't have, no, not after that. It was really a burr. Jordan Sadler, he's like, come on, brother, if there's ever a time to get down to business, do it. How are you just going to put a finger up and keep talking regular?
Right.
Come on, man.
But, you know, that's kind of course, what we love about him, too, is that he's so, you know, he's so even measured. He's so together. He's almost Spock-like
yeah.
in his logic and wisdom. You know?
And that Spock-like nature is something else about the president Key and Peele admire. Peele thinks Mr. Obama was the best thing to happen to black nerds everywhere.
Up until Obama, it was basically Urkel and the black guy from Revenge of the Nerds, Lamar. We had no role models. So he made us cool.
And they say he made it easier to be biracial. Jordan Peele grew up in New York. He was raised by a single white mother. Keegan-Michael Key was raised in Detroit. His mom is also white.
You go to school as a kid, and when your mom comes and the kids go, that's not your mom.
That ain't your mama. Mm. Why are you lying?
Which, as a kid, is like, that is a deep insult.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
that's our lifeline, is our mom, and we're little. So somehow, I think that expectation at a very young age that we were supposed to live up to something because of what we looked like, I mean, I think that probably invaded our souls and gave us the need to do this comedy on some level.
Yeah, yeah. I think,
did anyone ever make fun of you growing up because you didn't talk black enough?
Every single day of grade school.
I still make fun of him.
In one of their sketches, Key and Peele change the way they speak, depending on who's listening. It begins with Key by himself on a city sidewalk, talking on his cell phone.
Because you're my wife, and you love the theater, and it's your birthday.
A stranger walks up, played
great.
By Jordan Peele, who can hear what he's saying. So Key changes his voice to sound more black.
But they do have seats that are still left in the dress circle. So if you want me to get them theater tickets right now, I'm going to do it right now.
What's up, dog? I'm about 5 minutes away.
Yeah.
As they part, you realize that the second guy had been changing his voice, too.
So he got that
oh, my God, Christian, I almost totally just got mugged right now. I love the posturing of it. I love that it taps into like stuff that no one's talking about.
Makisha Madden Toby is a TV critic for the Detroit News.
How do people perceive you versus who you really are? How you let people perceive you? I mean, all of those things, I think they just brilliantly tap into those things.
Madden Toby says Key and Peele will fill the void that was left on Comedy Central when comedian Dave Chappelle quit his show in 2005.
Comedy Central needed that voice again ever since losing Chappelle, and I think that they are pretty close to it.
Key and Peele are huge Chappelle fans, but for now, they're not sure their new show will reach as many African Americans as Chappelle's did. A tough crowd, they say.
It really concerns us,
to be terribly frank. Yeah, that's just one of the things, I guess.
It concerns us that African Americans enjoy this show.
Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. Their new show debuts next week on Comedy Central. Sketches include parodies of a reality cooking show, being related to Thomas Jefferson, and the little lies husbands tell each other about their wives. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
You can help WILL provide enriching educational programs and services across Central Illinois for years to come by making a planned gift. You'll be a member in WILL's Legacy Circle, joining visionaries who have already invested in the future of Illinois public media. Contact Donda Beard at 217-333-7300 or online for more information at WILL.illinois.edu/support.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 27th of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, born in Salzburg, Austria, 1756, who only lived for 35 years. But he started early, child prodigy from a family of musicians, toured all over Europe, wrote his first opera at the age of 11. He died at the age of 35 in mysterious circumstances. There's a popular image of him dying poor, miserable, working on a funeral requiem as he died. But overall, his final year was a productive one. He was living in Vienna. He was still getting commissions. He didn't have a lot of money that year, but then again, he rarely did. He and his wife, Constanze, never seemed able to live on what Mozart made. It was a busy year. In the first months of 1791, he wrote dance music for the winter balls at the court. He wrote the Piano Concerto No. 27. In the summer, a messenger came asking Mozart to write a requiem for his patron, Count Franz von Walsig, who had lost his wife, wanted to commission a requiem in her honor. Mozart was working on the opera La Clemenza di Tito to celebrate the coronation of Emperor Leopold as King of Bohemia, which premiered in early September. And 3 weeks later, his opera The Magic Flute opened in Vienna, which was a big hit. In October, he wrote the Clarinet Concerto in A, then a cantata for the Freemason Lodge, which he directed himself, November the 18th. Finally, he put all his energy toward the Requiem, but just after the performance of the cantata, he became extremely ill. He had a fever. His whole body was swollen. He continued writing the Requiem right up until he died, which was only 2 weeks after he became sick. And he died on December the 5th, 1791, was buried in a mass unmarked grave, which was a common practice for the middle class of Vienna. Nobody knows what his illness was. There are many theories about it: rheumatic fever, tuberculosis, syphilis, congestive heart failure, kidney disease, poisoning. But today is his birthday, 1756. Mozart, who said music in even the most terrible situations must never offend the ear, but always remain a source of pleasure. And it's the birthday of Lewis Carroll, born in Daresbury, England, 1832, Charles Lutwidge Dodgson, gifted at math, taught at Oxford, wrote poems and short stories, took photographs, and then one day in 1856, he took three little girls, Ina, Edith, and Alice, on a boating trip down the river, and told them the story that became Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. and a few years later its sequel, Through the Looking Glass, and what Alice found there. Lewis Carroll, whom Mark Twain called the stillest and shyest full-grown man I have ever met. Here's a poem for today by Kay Ryan, entitled Don't Look Back. This is not a problem for the necklace. Fish cannot recklessly swivel their heads to check on their fry. No one expects this. They are torpedoes of disinterest, compact capsules that rely on the odds for survival, unfollowed by the exact and modest number of goslings the S-necked goose is, who, if she looks back, acknowledges losses, and if she does not, also loses. Don't Look Back by Kay Ryan. From Say Uncle, published by